All right, we're going to get started now. This is my favorite part of the poetry evening. But I'm going to ask you, everyone here, okay, that's going to read tonight. We have 10 sign-in readers. One poem, and make it like no more than 2 pages. Okay, if it's like goes into 3 or 4, do like I do. Continue it next week. And that ain't a bad thing, because the 10th poet, I feel, honestly, it kills the 10th poet. Let me have one of this. And it is not to exclude anybody's work, but let's use good common sense there. Fred Peterson, come on up, buddy.
Here I am.
Oh, that was easy.
I'm in line. I want to be on time.
Can I get you the Nazis?
That's probably going to be good for me, isn't it? Okay, growing up in Arkansas in the 50s, lying awake, listening to the putt-putt-putt of the water pumps in the canal outside, and listening on radio to the two biggest 50-watt stations, KDKA and KMOX, listening to Harry Carey and Bob Prince. And thinking about that made me think about this last weekend. If you've never been a fan, or if you're just a little bit of a baseball fan, the last couple of months with the Pirates has got to put a little juice in your machine. So this is A Diamond Full of Skills. Epigram. Yes is a world, and in this world of yes, live skillfully curled, all worlds, E.E. Cummings. In early April, skeptics scoffed at World Series talk. I dared to counter back. Yes, they can. Yes, they can make it through the dark opening month. Yes, to bringing an old tattooed pitcher over from Philly. Yes, to pitching mates. Glasses are, they're on me. yes to pitching mates who rarely let you down. Yes to bringing a Korean utility man to a strange land. Yes to sticking with a hometown boy living his dreams. Yes to filling a once barren park with cheers night after night. Don't forget Kutch. Yes, he's there in the clutch. Yes to putting a tall, lanky question mark out in right field. Yes to returning a left fielder who has yet to see his true stardom. Yes to making us forget the catching star who left us. He'll be sorry. Yes, yes, yes to the puppet master who pulls strings with the best of them. And yes, to the puppet master's masters who have it easy now, watching their handiwork play ball.
Next up is Charlie Bryce.
Okay, all you have to know about this poem is that a Catholic priest will take holy water to spread it over something, and he uses what's called an aspergillum. That's the little stick he uses to spread the water. This is called The Merciful Beneficence of Repression. Let's just say the incense fell out of his censer a long time ago. Let's just say his holy water boat sunk. Let's just say his rosary beads bounced widely along his psyche and dribbled onto the sanctuary floor. No one wanted to serve Mass with Monsignor Hartman. He would grab your arm in an iron grip and grimace as close as he got to love. But here I was, alone, serving a requiem mass for a poor young woman who died of a church and state enforced coat hanger abortion. Her relations wailed and keen. One of them crawled on her knees up the center aisle of St. Mary's, where Monsignor Hartman and I stood before the small casket. Because the other two altar boys had fagged out, I had to balance the censer and holy water boat, the charcoal and incense, while Monsignor, in his black cape and mood, stared at me maliciously until I offered him the holy water boat. He took the aspergillum and stepped down to anoint the coffin with the church's holy tears. Instead, he dropped the aspergillum and grabbed his throat, his pallor as pale as back alley putty. Blessed Terra of Terror. Holy shit, I intoned. Was the old blowhard having a heart attack? The grieving multitude gasped. What possessed me to look at my feet, I don't recall. Head bowed, I discovered my right shoe planted atop Monsignor's cape, causing the gold clasp at his throat to smite his Adam's apple like Cain crushed Abel. Holy shit, I chanted again and lifted my foot. The Monsignor winged towards the casket like an ecclesiastical trapeze flyer. I remember nothing after that except the image of Monsignor Hartman draped over the coffin, clutching it like a vulture in a Caravaggio nightmare. My first experience of the merciful beneficence of repression. Thank you.
I might have to say a few Hail Marys over that, after that. Okay. Please welcome Judy Bryce.
So this is from my first and only book, Renditions in a Palette. I have one copy, and actually two copies, the one I'm reading from. And if you think you don't want to buy it, but rethink that, it's at Amazon. So this is the first poem I wrote that's in this copy. First poem, it was published in Patterson Literary Review, and I'm very proud of it. And I've never read it before in a reading. Photographs. You would say that you look at a landscape for only minutes. Before eyes moving on, you search hungry for a figure to seduce you. But not being you, I could never glance, even eyes askew, at a landscape without merging with the white clouds and misty sky, or hearing, perhaps, the crispy yellow poplar leaves flicker on their branch, and then I might lie just above the worms and smell the rich loam amidst small blades of burnished grass.
Our next poet is Nancy Esther James.
About a year ago, I was in a writing workshop. Most people were writing prose, and I was working on a memoir. And one day, the instructor gave us an in-class writing prompt, which went like this. She said, imagine that your book is published and that you are putting it into a padded mailer to send it to your ideal reader. Describe that reader. Well, I didn't take this with complete seriousness, and I wrote this poem. To a reader just like me, Okay, you fed the cats. Now you're pouring your juice, taking peanut butter and jelly out of the fridge, pulling paper napkins from the holder, setting your place at the table. Of course, you're still in robe, PJs, and slippers, and only some parts of you are connected to your brain at this time of day. But something to read is essential to your breakfast while the cats lap and slurp. You sit, pull book and plate as close to each other as safety permits. Open at the bookmark you chose for its colors matching the book's cover. Not fiction, memoir, though rarely by anyone famous. You like to read stories of souls growing up in semi-dysfunctional families, a few personality disorders here and there, or in other lands, other countries, preferably an Asian country, and stories of spiritual journeys, anyone's vision of light, wanderings from faith to faith, from anywhere to somewhere better, from something known to something new.
And our next poet is Julie Cecchini. This poem was an experiment with form after a poet named John Sands, and I hope I can, I can't explain how I put this together, but it's a sequence of some different fragments from dreams. And it's called I've This Dream, after John Sands. I've this packed, new, dark variation, shadows on, under and my old eyes dream, water, water is around, leaking windows from rooms, stained hallways, kitchen eye, ceiling never, I knew, am, existed, riding, wrap, in, around, dismal porch, dark with tunnel, white, without wicker, light, chairs, red walking, Buick downtown, door on, fell stilts into brown creek, Monongahela, waters, waters, Hare over Krishna's, flowing, want to me, bouquet, singing street, spiders, I'm crawling naked beneath in glass, Chicago, floors, outside, I, the dove green, into bunker, a Chinese dirt chimes pile, where saving will myself, I, from hang looming, their truck sounds. Now I'm going to read it the other way that it goes. I've packed dark shadows under my eyes. Water is leaking from stained kitchen ceiling. I am riding in dismal dark tunnel without light. Red Buick door fell into creek. Waters, Hare Krishnas want me singing. Spiders crawling beneath glass floors. I dove into a dirt pile. Saving myself from looming truck. This new variation on an old dream, water around windows, rooms, hallways I never knew existed, wrap around porch with white wicker chairs, walking downtown on stilts, brown Monongahela waters overflowing to Bouquet Street. I'm naked in Chicago, outside the green bunker, Chinese chimes, Where will I hang their sounds? Thanks.
We have a visitor from another land, actually. Please welcome John Stopp, who is here for the first time, and he's come in with his wife, Betty, from Swickley. So, John Stopp.
I'll sit down. The name of this poem is How Tuesday Began. There is a Marine sniper, young and tan. He wears a copper vest of sun, with his shirt off, muscles of water, tattoos, and a short haircut. Now back in the USA, and he means business. Reading dawn's fine print from the front seat of a 71 Lincoln with New Mexico plates, pulled over on a tree lawn in Cleveland Heights, unloading bricks of wrapped marijuana far from jungle thorns and the rice-filled Mekong. I suppose his eyesight is fantastic. It is a warm December, and I can hardly see the bare tree branches penciled into a feathery sky. So many bark stalks after snow melts, when the wind blows off Lake Erie, they rub together with the sound of men stropping razors. Already the Marine and his friends have acquired a stolen gun collection spread out on our kitchen table, next to a table hockey game, a Remington 700, an M40A1 bolt-action rifle, a Mauser C96 semi-automatic, and some others. I worry that after heavy drinking, the table hockey will become violent, because we are drinking a lot now, and smoking a lot, and forgetting a lot. This morning he said to me, there was a section of Vietnam countryside with cold bubbling water in high lakes near a Buddhist monastery where his company patrolled an old rubber plantation. In the air, the smell of sawmill smoke and candles. He lay down for a minute and slept in the shade with his gun, his helmet, his equipment on a bed of green fern shoots and dreamed of returning home and stealing and selling drugs, because he said, some men have to pay for high lakes, for deep water the color of tar, and be judged in the sky's gun sight, or move many miles beyond. Like the smoothest bullet cutting the greenest grass, like the smoothest skin of a whore, he said. And that's how Tuesday began, Christmas Day, 1973.
John has a book out from Main Street Rag. It was published this year, so hopefully we'll have him reading next year. So I really look forward to that. That's a fine poem. Our next reader is Angela Cornelius. Please welcome Angela.
Yeah. I'm good. I'll lean. How's that? Hey, thanks to Jimmy and Joan and Carlo, since I'm in the MFA at Carlo right now, so this is practice for me. So I'm going to read a poem I wrote last semester, actually just after Christmas, for my cousin. So this is to remember him, and it's called Cleaning Up. It's always the women who mop up the mess, blot the carpet clean, wash the dirty curtains, wipe down the walls. Mom does the mopping and curtains. I scrub the floor on hands and knees, lean the ladder against splattered drywall, and rub the ruddy stains. All this blood from just one body. Dark puddles seep deep into the hard wood. We soak up his blood with rags, buckets of hot water, bleach, and pine sol. all that remains of my cousin after getting shot, a 12-gauge slug to the chest, a Christmas Eve murder obliterated his young heart. My hands wring the dirty sponge, eyes see red. Try not to think about it, what I'm doing. Space out about being here. Keep wiping it away, the blood of my cousin. Last time I saw him was here, right here, in his dad's kitchen. We were talking about picking ginseng in the woods. He was a year younger than me. I feel closer to him now than I ever wanted to be. His blood is my blood, our blood, family blood, all over my hands, up to my elbows, blood, even on my face and in my hair, his blood. I'm covered in cold blood, blood that can never be wiped clean. Thank you.
Angela, thank you. Thank you for reading that poem. Jared Labby, are you here, Jared? Yes, he is. Please welcome Jared Labby.
Thanks. This is called Querido. Allow me to tell you a most extraordinary thing. To sing about a son's death in a minor key. Natalie is filming. Juan is smiling. This is my ordinary day. Eating a bar, trying Pittsburgh's best Philadelphia cheesesteak. Unextraordinary. Falling in and out of time, the audience claps faster. And who is it that is walking? Is it Cyril? No, not today.
Than it is. Okay. And our next poet is Gail Cabrin. Is Gail here? Yeah, there she is. Okay.
Okay. I always hate these. Am I in the right place? Can you hear me? Okay. Okay. Birthday 62. Here I am, alone, but not. Old dog asleep upstairs on what he now considers his bed, allowing me graciously to share it with him, even if occasionally I rise before the sun. Perched on the windowsill, sleek and shiny black shy cat, but for me, cuddles, rubs, requests for petting, and her favorite canned tuna rewards me with purrs. Lots of calls, mom's now crackling voice, weaker this year. What will be for her? Daughter recovering from surgery, thankfully small, hopefully to heal well, rest with her roommate, buffalo dip, and Netflix. Son happy with his new life, out on his own, job, apartment, friends, calls to tell me happy birthday. I am happy. Ordering books of poetry about writing, so many books I have, so many poems yet to write, to read, bask in the words and tell my own stories, honing words while understanding life or not. So many questions. They are the vitality. Love is the meat, the base. Questions, the wonder and verve. Where to go from here? Officially a senior in some venues, not all. It seems like a milepost, another milepost, a chance to move beyond the grip of life's old impediments. Just free now, more or less, to go on as I wish, alone but not.
Okay. And so our final reader for the open mic is Sarah Sally Davis. Welcome, Sarah Sally.
Hate these things. Okay, guys, can you hear me? Say yes. Okay, good. Okay.
I don't often read about those of us who go up and down a bit in our lives. So I'm happy, so therefore I feel safe writing about depression. So this one is called Get Up. It is a, it's actually a thank you poem to my sister, Betsy. And who knows how to love people through things. Get up. At noon, my sister calls, as usual. She worries about me. The phone persists, insists. She is the only one who knows that I pretend I cannot hear its ring. Today, she tells me that a freakish winter morning brought momentary sun. It cheers me. Even when I part the curtain to constancy of gray, the day feels hopeful. I miss the singularity of light. Every day she calls me, again, 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 relentless with love.
I'm going to wind it down. Poetry, thank all of you for reading. I think poetry should be fun. And I'm going to conclude this with this. 16 years ago or 17 years ago, I arrested a guy, and he called me up last week, and he thanked me. Okay, and he wants to take me to lunch. And what had happened was I was on a complaint. There was a whorehouse, and I was buying the woman, and I did, and I was on my way out, and we were going to let her go. Okay, we're just going to give her to go ahead and go because we wanted to go to lunch. Okay. This guy, who was a young guy, 22, I think, years old at the time, come running across the parking lot with a stun gun. Now, I had no weapon on me. My partners were out in the yard in the parking area. They had weapons, and all we saw was the gun. And I'm yelling, gun, gun, I got a gun, I got a gun. And the girl, as I'm walking out, she's screaming, rape, he's raping me, he's raping me. She jumps on my head and my back and starts punching me. So he's aiming the stun gun. My partner's yelling, drop the gun, drop the gun, drop the gun. He throws the gun. He jumps on my head. So now I got him, a prostitute, and my partners were all rolling around on the ground with this guy. He's doing push-ups with me and two other police officers on his back. He's going, arr! He was high on crank, methamphetamine. And he's going, arr! And he's just a regular good old fight. My one partner goes to spray him with mace, mists, and sprays my other partner in the mouth. Now I got the whore punching me in my head. Then my one friend, who's a policeman, starts hitting him with the gun. Stop, drop the gun. So this is all going on, and all we wanted to do was go to get lunch. So now all this is going on. Finally, I mean, he's wailing us around like we're... So I roll over on his head, and I'll show you what you have to do. This is from Lawrenceville when I was a boy. This is how you learn how to fight. I grabbed him around his head and took his nose in my mouth and went, and he went, all right, I quit, I quit. You guys can't be cops. Cops don't bite. And I said, bah! He was beating us with the handcuffs. Finally, we get him and we cuff him. Now, this is 16, almost 17 years later. He calls me and tells me, thank you. He said, I've never gotten, because I gave him a huge break. We found about 4 ounces of cocaine and a couple ounces of crystal meth. But I was getting ready to retire, and I didn't really give a shit. Okay, so I gave him a break. He thanks me. He says, I never got in trouble. I have a daughter now. And he says, I never got in trouble ever again. I says, that's really cool. And this is, I'm just going to read you this. I had to tell you this story. I'm just going to read you the title. You almost bite a guy's nose off because he tries to kill you, and a whore jumps on your back, and you think of the big whorehouse in the sky, and that ain't bragging. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll see you next week. You can have fun with poetry if you try.